Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Medical Monday, April 12th. I'm Ray Graff. Support comes from Saratoga Hospital at its Saratoga Medical Group with more than 30 specialty practices, including eye care, allergy, ear, nose, and throat, and pain management on its Wilton campus, saratogahospital.org. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. David Mottola of Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes, New York. He's on the line to discuss dental care and answer your dental hygiene questions. It's going to be a busy program, I presume, so call early, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number, though, is 800-348-2551. You got a question about your choppers? David Mottola will be here, and we'll get to that after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. David Mottola of Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes, New York. He is on the line to answer your dental care questions. Dr. Mottola has treated patients at his private practice in Cohoes since 2009. He's a member of the American Dental Association, the New York State Dental Association, and is the current president of the New York State 3rd District Dental Society. If you have a question for Dr. Mottola, call us now. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. That's voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 1-800-348-2551. Dr. David Mottola, welcome back, sir.
Hello, thank you.
Nice to have you here. And we already have a bunch of calls on the line. Before we get to them, you can just educate me. Now, I've never, thankfully, had to have a root canal. But if you can just explain it to me, A, what goes wrong that causes you to have a root canal, and what you actually have to do, and why everyone's so terrified of having a root canal?
You got it. Well, let me start with the first part, which is why they have such a bad reputation. And probably historically, people were in a lot of pain when they needed them. And technology has come a long way, and now we're able to do these procedures without pain. So the fact that people dread them probably is embedded in past history. However, there's multiple reasons why you may need a root canal. Essentially, there's a nerve inside the root. Okay, so roots sit in the gum, and there's a nerve inside the root. And if bacteria gets in there, whether it be through a cavity, sometimes a tooth breaks, it lets bacteria in that way. Sometimes the tooth can have a trauma, like you can get a hockey puck or a steering wheel or something hit against the tooth, and then it can get a condition where it kind of has internal bleeding, so to say. So there's a couple of ways in which the tooth could either become infected or traumatized in which it would need a root canal. So the treatment, when you actually do a root canal, is you kind of roto-rooter the root, if you will. So you're cleaning out that there's a space in the root. It's called a canal. And inside is the blood vessel. So the teeth are connected to your entire body through the root. So there's a little opening on the bottom of the root where your nerve comes in, the blood supply comes in, and that's how it communicates to the rest of your body. Well, when you do a root canal, you're cleaning out that canal inside the root. You rinse it, you mechanically clean it. And the nerve is typically microscopic. Usually you can't see the nerve. Sometimes you can. But typically speaking, you don't see the nerve. You're just cleaning out that root and then mechanically rinsing it. And then you will put a filling material inside so that bacteria doesn't get back in. So, you know, it seems pretty basic, but really it is. It's a basic concept. It's been done for many, many years. It's done more comfortably now and much more quickly,
Why?
Than in the past. Well, technology helps. There's, and I would say that most practitioners don't do it by hand anymore. We have rotary instruments that we use. Some endodontists who are specialists who just do root canals, they'll have microscopes often. So, you can do it more quickly. We're able to get teeth numb more effectively. So the procedure technology really has enabled it to go quicker.
We're joined today by Dr. David Mottola of Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes, New York. Our number is 800-348-2551. I hear some voices in the background. I hope that's not the hygienist and you're actually doing a procedure right now.
No, I like to multitask, but that would be a little too difficult. But we're people are always moving around here, and unfortunately with COVID is probably the reason we're not in the studio these days. But we have a thriving practice where people are moving around, but. No, I'll try to stick to the phone call try not to do any dentistry during
All right, no fillings or anything. Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Patrick and Troy. Patrick, you're first.
Hello, thank you. Just wondered what you thought of the major brand toothpaste that claims to repair and restore tooth enamel. And don't sweat the root canals. I've had a bunch of them. They're no big deal anymore.
All right, man.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad you said that. So as far as some of the major brand toothpaste that make these claims, there are some studies done on these types of toothpaste. So, you know, a lot of times there's studies done by the company, not so much like a peer, double-blind peer review type study. But the FDA does monitor and regulate claims, you know, so from a marketing standpoint, the FDA does regulate those types of claims. So, yes, there has to be to a degree, some level of truth to that. But they, when you talk about repairing enamel, typically speaking, you're talking about around the gum line where the tooth may have decalcified. So the enamel has decalcified. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to strengthen that enamel. A lot of times after people get braces, the brackets, they come off, the enamel is decalcified. People get gum recession, and the enamel becomes decalcified. So these toothpastes do have certainly some ingredients that will help support that enamel and make it stronger. Does that mean you're going to grow back all of your enamel? No, typically not. But again, from a claim standpoint, those types of things are regulated by the FDA. So,
right.
So yeah, those are good things.
Least,
yeah.
Oh, they are. So there's at least some truth to it.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Thanks a lot for the call. Now, I mean, what's stopping a dentist of the future from getting a can of some sort of enamel stuff and just a little paintbrush and painting it on? I mean,
I'm sure they're working on it somewhere. No, there is some exciting research that's going on, research and development, with especially in the pediatric scenario where silver diamide, where they're actually applying it to the tooth as opposed to doing fillings. So there is research going on, and who knows what the future holds, but.
All right, fair enough. Dr. David Mottola is our guest on this Medical Monday. It's Dentistry Today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's grab one more before the first break. And Jim in Matamoros. Jim. Oh, boy. Ouch. Okay, all right. Compelling radio. Thanks, Jim.
Are apical abscesses a common sequela to chronically fractured teeth? And are pulp testers still being used to assess the viability of the teeth?
I'm sorry. It was breaking up on me a little bit. Could you just repeat that for me? It was about a periapical abscess.
Are apical abscesses a common sequela to chronically fractured teeth? And are pulp testers still being used to assess the viability of teeth?
Is that still done? Is that your question?
Yeah, sure.
So typically speaking, if you're going to have what we call a periapical radiolucency, like a dark radiolucency of the bottom of the root, typically be associated with chronic infection on the tooth. So that in of itself is a diagnosis, and you wouldn't necessarily have to be confirmed by a pulp tester in that regard. So radiographic evidence of that periapical radiolucency combined with, you know, I don't know what other symptoms were associated, but you wouldn't necessarily need a confirmation from a pulp tester in that situation.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. And just a reminder to our listeners, nobody is perfect and everybody is a human. But if you can avoid excess noise on the phone, Zach, the engineer, will live a longer life. In other words, don't bang it on the table. Try not to make a lot of racket with the old phone, and then Zach will be. Hey, okay, it's Medical Monday. Dr. David Mottola joins us. We'll be back. Fox Pop, it's Medical Monday, Dentistry Today with Dr. David Mottola of Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes, New York. Our number here is 800-348-2551 if you have a question, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And David, a few emails here. This one's from Barbara in Ulster County. Can you tell me if custom night guards have a lifespan beyond which they should be replaced? I have one that is in good shape. It's not worn, though, and still fits, but it is going on 7 years old. Is there any reason I should replace it?
So that's a good question. Let me just back up a little bit. A night guard is meant to be used for people who have a chronic grinding habit at night. So we call it a parafunctional habit. There could be many different types of parafunctional habits, but one of the most common is a nocturnal bruxism, which is grind your teeth at night. So the problem is you can't control yourself and say, tonight I'm not going to grind my teeth when I sleep. Well, you know, obviously you're sleeping and it's a subconscious act. So the downside of grinding your teeth at night can lead to tooth breaking, sensitivity. You grind the tooth enamel. It can change your bite. You can develop jaw issues, like TMJ is a common term for that. So there could be a plethora of different conditions that result out of chronic grinding. So a night guard is an effective way to control the ill effects of grinding at night. Doesn't necessarily mean that you stop grinding your teeth, but what the caller is trying to accomplish by wearing the night guard is they're trying to take the pressure off their teeth. So you can go to any drugstore, and then in the dental section, you'll find it's a boil and bite. It's not like a football mouthpiece, but it's a similar idea. You boil it and you bite into it, and then you wear it at night. And
yeah.
Okay. So conversely, there are lab-made custom night guards where the dentist will take an impression. You send it to the lab, or maybe some dentists might make it in-house. But nonetheless, it's a custom fit conform to just your teeth. So when you do the over-the-counter ones, you know, they're general one size fits all. You bite into it, and then you have excess material that kind of gets pushed out of the way. So my issue with the over-the-counter night guards, it's just if you were to bite into the wrong place, like an unnatural position when you make it, it's going to put you into that position every time you wear it. So secondly, they typically kind of wear down. Now, in this case, the person's had it for 7 years, so there's no specific time that I'm aware of as to how long they can last. I guess if it's helping and it's comfortable, then and it's still in one piece, then you know I would keep it. So, but in general, you know, as a dentist, we like the custom ones just because we control the situation and
yeah.
We're comfortable that they're properly fitting for the patient. But no, there is, to answer her question, there's not that I'm aware of a specific amount of time that these can last. Typically, they wear quicker than the custom ones just because of the material they're made from.
This one's from David, and David writes, I've been reading about facelift dentistry, where it improves jawline and jaw position, thereby improving the way you look. Is this a thing? And that's from David. I've not heard of that one.
You know what? I apologize, but I have not either. So, I'm not sure if that's something that just happens in California. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. It's not something I'm familiar with. It's not something that we have done in our office or that I've seen out there. But if it would be something where it's done in conjunction with you know, repositioning of joints and
yeah.
skin. You know, I don't know. I'm not familiar with it.
All right, fair enough. This one's from Kyle. Kyle says, I have hypodentia. I'm missing two premolars. How common is this? How long can I expect my baby teeth to last? And that's from Kyle.
Yes, good question. So I don't know the statistics off the top of my head, but it's not that uncommon. I mean, we have many patients in our practice who don't have those particular teeth. And then depending on the situation, the baby teeth can stay there a long period of time. I have some patients who has been there their whole life, and they probably will, you know, last their entire life. Some patients, not so much. So what happens is when a baby tooth exfoliates or comes out, it's the permanent tooth resorbing the root or the baby tooth that pushes it out. Well, if there's no permanent tooth there to resorb the root, sometimes they can stay for a long time. It does depend on a lot of different factors with regard to what other teeth are around, how much root is left, how much is used in the bite, you know, are the other teeth straight? So there's no specific amount of time that it can be there a long time. Sometimes we keep them. Sometimes we say, well, let's take the tooth out and make a or put an implant in, or if maybe the neighboring teeth have would need crowns, we could make a permanent bridge. So every situation is different. But again, we have patients who retain those primary teeth for some time, but it does depend on their situation, and sometimes it's best to take them out and replace them in some way.
Dr. David Mottola joins us today. It's Dentistry on Medical Monday. This last email for now, and then we'll go back to the phones. This one's from Andrew in Canajoharie. Andrew writes, 3 years ago, I was hospitalized for 5 days, two in the ICU, with an abscess that had formed at the base of my tongue. It was incredibly painful. My doctors at Albany Med said that this was usually caused by a bad tooth. In my case, all my teeth were perfectly fine. Have you ever encountered such a problem in your practice, and is it common? And that's from Andrew in Canajoharie.
Well, as an abscess under the tongue, we see them with blocked salivary ducts. So you get like a salt stone, and it'll block the salivary. You have many, many salivary ducts and glands in your mouth, right? So it'll get blocked, kind of like a kidney stone, if you will. So they can get blocked and they can swell. Now, anytime there's stagnant fluid and the saliva can't flow through, it can form an infection. So when I see an abscess that's under the tongue, that's, we're assuming in this case it's not associated with a tooth, then it likely could have been a blocked salivary duct.
Hmm. All right, back to the phones we go on this Medical Monday, 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Dr. David Mottola, Jill in Longmeadow. Jill, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. In my 30s, I had three consultations with oral surgeons highly recommending not to remove my impacted wisdom teeth. And now that I'm in my 50s, there is a cyst. I just had an x-ray. There's a little cyst on behind my wisdom tooth. And the dentist said that at my age, he thinks that now they should come out. Mm. But there's bone that has grown, obviously,
right,
over my tooth. So I'm thinking this would have to be performed in a hospital. Do you think it would still be okay to leave them alone? Or if there was, I know cysts
yeah,
are common,
so they
usually
saw the cyst-
don't.
Right. Well, that's part of the.
Yeah.
You definitely should see an oral surgeon. That would be my recommendation, and get their input.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, there's probably a reason why the previous three said not to extract it. Is it near? Like, there's a nerve that comes down, some mandibular nerve. Is it? Do they think it was near that nerve canal, perhaps, as to why they didn't want to take it out when you're in your 30s, or?
They had said it was for sinus reasons and also trigeminal nerve.
Yeah. So anytime you do anything in dentistry or any type of surgery, there's a risk reward. So I'm sure, and let me just preface this. I have my wisdom teeth retained on the bottom, and they're partially sticking out, and typically we would light those out, but on the x-ray, they're very close to the nerve, and it's kind of like, well, you know, probably not worth the risk of damaging the nerve in some way because we, you know, for those wisdom teeth, and we haven't, they're still there. So, you know, it's all about risk reward. So you would have to get the input from the surgeon saying, okay, well, this is what the cyst is, and you know, is it riskier to take the tooth out versus leave the cyst, and can it be treated any other way? So it's really going to be a decision, you know, that you make, but I would have the surgeon lay it out for me, you know, these are the pros and cons of leaving it or taking it out, and you'll have to make a decision. But I think, yeah, it's important to know, well, what is the ill effect of you know, retaining the tooth?
Go ahead, doctor.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to thank what Jill for calling. Go ahead.
What would you do, Dr. Mottola?
I don't know. I'd have to see what the surgeon said, to be honest with you. I'd like to hear, you know, really specifically, what are the risks of taking it out, and then versus what are the risks of, you know, what's the situation around that cyst? Because they could do a different type. I don't know what kind of X-ray you have, but there's a CBCT scan. It's a three-dimensional image. They do one of those? Does that sound familiar?
Yes, I had told them that they were of the opinion, let's wait and see. And I said, I'd like to be a little bit more proactive because it makes me anxious.
Sure.
With my wisdom teeth. So it's the insurance doesn't pay for it, but I will pay out of pocket for the CBC scan for peace of mind.
Yes, I would do that.
Okay.
That'll give a little more information. They could give you probably a better explanation of to do it or not do it.
Well, Jill, thank you very much for the call. Dr. David Mottola joins us from Mottola Family Dentistry in Cohoes, New York, and Ruth in Vermont. Hiya, Ruth, you're on.
Yes, thank you. I had a metahemoglobinemia reaction from benzocaine in the dental office, and I need to know whether I could react to other cane drugs. I was at the ophthalmologist last week, and they would not give me the cane drug to be prior to the dilation of the pupils. So it was a little
right. Stingy. So it's all similar class of medication, or, you know, whether in our case be anesthesia. You know, there's lidocaine and septocaine, and benzocaine is, you know, 20% benzocaine. A lot of times you can find over the counter, but we'll use it like a topical. Was this an injection where you had the reaction?
Oh, he had the supersized Q-tips, and he had soaked it for hours in this benzocaine, and he put it underneath my lip without even saying anything to me, because I don't use any type of cane drugs because I have my mother reacted. So
right.
I didn't do any type of drugs at all in the dental office. So I was really surprised, and I'm sitting there thinking, I'm going to be fine. Well, I wasn't fine. So, and I also apparently would have a reaction to the counter drug for the metahemoglobinemia. So
right.
It was I had a close call, actually.
Right.
Sure. Well, that's something definitely that needs to be in your medical history and record, and even, you know, be making sure you verbalize that when you're in any sort of medical office that they, you know, avoid those types of treatments, you know, whether it be anesthetic or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you don't have a reaction like that. I know, did your, from a diagnostic standpoint, do you have your physician, I don't know how they, if you see an allergist or why they, you know, you're susceptible to that, the cane.
I went to an allergist, and he just said that I needed to wear a medic alert, but he didn't do anything more than that.
Right.
He didn't investigate as to the other cane drugs I might also react to. So I'm just...
Yeah, so you'd want to know that, certainly, moving forward. You'd want to have a reaction in the future. I would say your physician sent you to the allergist. Is that how you ended up with the allergist?
Yeah, but he didn't do anything.
Right.
He just told me to wear a medic alert. Well, that doesn't help me for other situations like at the ophthalmologist office. You know, that doesn't help
right.
me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what Dr. Mottola can actually do about this your specific situation, Ruth, but Dr. Mottola, if you have some parting advice.
Yeah, I would certainly make sure, when you see your dentist, make sure they know that and make sure it's in the history and verbalize it when you're in there so that situation doesn't happen again. Because sometimes, even though it's in the medical history, people are human and they may not read it or notice it or, you know, so be proactive in the dental chair and talk about alternative ways in which you can have treatment done without, you know, where you're not in pain. So
All right, Ruth, thanks a lot for the call. By the way, speaking of pain, have you ever had an experience where someone says, listen, I want hypnosis?
Well, not specifically where they asked for hypnosis, but we have had situations where people want to be sedated many times. And hypnosis, I guess, would fall under that umbrella. There's different ways. You know, that's one way to kind of sedate someone. So, we have, you know, many patients who end up seeking treatment while under sedation. And we do a certain level of sedation, but, you know, some offices, and depending on what you need, like wisdom teeth, a lot of people get their wisdom teeth out under sedation. And so oral surgeons do a lot of sedation.
Yeah. Do you have the laughing gas where you are? I've never had that at a dentist.
I do not. When I practiced in Maryland, I used it. I have not here in New York, but that can be effective, certainly. You still typically need to be anesthetized and numb the tooth, but it can certainly put people, mellow people out.
So in other words, it relaxes sedation. You and makes you laugh, but you still have pain. What's the point?
No. Well, you don't. It is an analgesic, okay, but typically speaking, you would also supplement with. Yeah, but you just don't mind it as much.
Yeah, I got you.
You don't mind the needle. Yeah.
Dr. David Mottola joins us today. It's Medical Monday, Dentistry Today on the program. 800-348-2551 is the number. Bennett is in Newburgh. Hello, Bennett.
Yes.
How you doing?
Hello, good afternoon. Pretty good, but you mentioned pain, and I just want to say that when I go to the dentist, I usually feel an enormous amount of pain, but it's not connected with the drilling of the extraction so much. It's the bill at the end of the visit that irks me.
Yes.
And my question is, it's been irking me for quite some time, but now that I'm retired and on a fixed income, it's especially difficult. Mm. So my question is, why is it that here you are on a program called Medical Monday, so you're a dentist, you're part of the medical profession. So my question is, why isn't dentistry covered in comprehensive insurance plans in general, and in specifically Medicare? It would seem that I can't tell you how many people I know, friends of mine, who I'm walking around with missing teeth, they have gaps in their mouth, all kinds of, simply because they can't afford the price. Did you have any insight into why it is that the mouth, which is as much a part of a body as my feet and toe and my hands, is not covered under my medical insurance?
Well,
my Medicare.
Hey, you know, Bennett, I am in complete agreement with you, but I don't think Dr. David Mottola should have to answer this question. But
I can touch on it a little bit if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
So I agree, and it all boils down to money, I'm sure. So, you know, I can't explain to you the profitability of dental insurance versus medical insurance and how the insurance companies determine who, you know, what they're going to cover and what they're not. They've carved out traditionally dental and eye, like outside of the basic medical plans. Medicare does now, some of the Medicare plans we have participate with some of the Medicare supplement plans. So and I don't know, I apologize, I can't articulate all the plans that even within my office and that like we're in the network with, but there are Medicare supplement.
Hang on, let him finish, Bennett. Go ahead, doctor.
Now, as I said, there are Medicare supplement plans that exist where you have some degree of dental coverage. Now, I can't, again, explain the pros and cons of the different ones, but it does exist. However, I agree with you. Like, Medicaid offers very little dental. I mean, there are Medicaid providers, adult, you know, where they have coverage. But typically speaking, dental insurance, I guess the best coverage is when you get it as like a rider on your medical plan through your employer. It is available. You can go on the marketplace, and you can find individual dental insurance. Now, I'm not sure if that really, for what you get, makes sense. You know, you have to look at it. Like in our office, we offer a discount plan for people who don't have insurance because it is an issue. It used to be when you retired, a lot of times you're able to keep your health and dental insurance. Well, you know, that rarely happens anymore. So we do, and like in my office and many offices, I think, offer a discount plan for people who don't have insurance. But it is difficult. But at the end of the day, I really don't know. I know it boils down to money, but I can't explain to you why.
Yeah, it's a question for politicians. Bennett, we're late for a break, but I'll give you 15 seconds for a follow-up here.
Oh, okay. I just want to ask, doctor, you said you're a member of a number of medical dental advocacy groups. Are there any groups you belong to of dentists who are working hard to make sure that we get coverage of this on our insurance and Medicare?
Yeah, the American Dental Association. Yeah, the American Dental Association spends a lot of money on lobbying and resources and speaking to the government and promoting dental health. And frankly, they sue insurance companies. They have lawsuits with different insurance companies in different states. So they are advocate.
Okay.
But it is certainly an uphill battle, I think, when you're competing with some of these insurance companies.
Well, Bennett, thanks a lot for the call. We're way overdue here. 800-348-2551 on this Medical Monday. It's Dentistry Today. We'll open the mailbag again in a moment. T-Bone Walker here on Vox Pop. It's Dentistry Today with Dr. David Mottola. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And, Doctor, this one is from Joanne in Taconic, New York. How often are routine x-rays necessary? Which ones do you recommend?
Well, we like to do what's called the bite wing x-rays every 12 to 18 months, depending on the patient's risk factor. So in other words, if they have a lot of existing fillings, especially maybe if they have the silver, the amalgam fillings that are still around, or crowns, because when we do the exam, we can't see underneath the fillings, we can't see through the crowns. So those bite wings are just the back teeth, and they're, what do you do? You do usually two on a side, and they get the top and the bottom back teeth. You're looking at bone level, and you're looking for cavity on those. We like to do a full set of x-rays. We call full mouth series, where you're getting the roots of the teeth. Again, it depends on the patient, but typically every 5 years, you'll do a pano x-ray, which is the x-ray, like if you were to get your wisdom teeth taken out, where it shows all the teeth in one x-ray. It'll show the jaw. We like to see those. There's some diagnostic benefits from that x-ray that you can't get from the bite wings. So, but frequency-wise, the bite wings we like to do every 12 months, 18 months if it's a low-risk patient, meaning they rarely have cavities over time, they don't, very few fillings, things like that.
This one's from Peter in Barryville. And Peter says, I'm going in Thursday to have a tooth extracted. The tooth split because it was root canaled years ago and became brittle. The dentist says that she will graft cadaver bone and then do an implant. What can I expect in terms of discomfort and time for healing?
Okay, well, that's a good question. It does depend on where the tooth is and the extent of the procedure. But that day, certainly, you're going to be limited physical activity. You know, the healing after tooth comes out, whether it's grafted or not afterwards, you want the blood clot to form and to stay intact. You don't want to disrupt the blood clot. So any sort of bending and lifting is going to disrupt that blood clot. So you're really limited in physical activity. So you get out of mowing the lawn that day sure. But it does depend on the particular tooth. And so the surgeon, is whether a periodontist or oral surgeon, whoever's doing it, or it could be a general dentist, whoever's doing it will be specific about we call them post-op instructions. In other words, you know, but in general, you know, over-the-counter pain medication, I usually recommend probably before the anesthetic wears off. And then, you know, limiting physical activity at least that day, and then dependent upon, you know, more specific based on the actual procedure.
Is it common to use cadaver bones in your line of work?
Yeah, so what they're going to do is when a tooth comes out, it will leave space, right? And then that bone where the roots were and the tooth will fill in. But what bone does, cadaver bone, which is commonly used, it will, especially if you're going to put an implant in, but really in any situation, it will allow that area to heal well, predictably fill in with bone. So, because if you leave it up to nature, you just don't know how it's going to fill it in. A lot of times people have missing teeth. They'll have like indentations where the bone used to be. So the bone called grafting will really enable the site where the tooth used to be to heal well, have a nice solid foundation so that if you want to do an implant, because implant is a post, an implant goes into the bone. So the more solid the bone is, the better success the implant will have.
All right, and we're going to go back to the phones now with Dr. David Mottola. We did get an email who reminds me to tell you that regarding medical costs, people should listen to the new Freakonomics episode, which covers that pretty well in detail. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Pat is in East Greenbush. Hello, Pat.
Hello, how are you?
Good, you're on.
Okay. I've been treated for periodontal disease for a number of years. And about a year before the pandemic, I have two autoimmune diseases. One was eczema and one is lichen. A year before the pandemic, the lichen moved into my gums.
Right.
Do you have any information or anything? Nothing. I go every couple months for the periodontal cleaning. I think what helped was not having an appointment for the past year. The soreness and redness has calmed down, but I still have it. Any suggestions?
Well, I mean, you've seen your periodontist with this condition, right? Lichen planus is typically the condition in the mouth.
Yeah. They're a regular dentistry, and question.
Gotcha.
Should I be seeing a periodontal dentist?
Well, I usually do. I refer my patients with this condition to periodontist. Now, that doesn't mean your general dentist is not capable of treating it, okay? I'm not saying that, but that's what I do, typically speaking. The treatment typically is some form of steroid, you know, whether it be a topical corticoid steroid. I mean, sure, you could do oral steroids, but usually it's now, that doesn't mean you're cut forever on them. It's just, you know, if it's flared up, or it's more symptomatic, that's yeah, typically the initial treatment. And then certainly, I think a 3-month recall, we call them, like, you know, going in every 3 months would help minimize it as well. You know, that's what I do. I do refer to the periodontist, but that doesn't mean that you're not in good hands. But when you have flare-ups, usually it's a corticosteroid that is treated with.
Before the pandemic, they had a new dentist there. She's no longer there. But she had asked me if I had heard of the magic mouthwash. So I'm not sure if you're aware of what that is.
Yeah.
And I got the script for it and got it home and realized what it was. And it's like, no way. It's just lidocaine.
Well, it's funny.
So that
yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Now, I'm just wondering, nobody has spoken to me about the steroids, and I'm assuming the lidocaine is not considered steroids, correct?
No, that's an analgesic. I mean, the magic mouthwash, there's different ingredients, okay? If you went and did a Google search on magic mouthwash, you would find 100 different variations of magic mouthwash. So, what it really is trying to do is just make something more comfortable in your mouth, make a discomfort, typically a tissue related discomfort, more comfortable. It's going to numb it. It's going to coat it. It's not necessarily a, long-term solution. It just makes it more comfortable, which is a fact. I mean, don't get me wrong. That helps right in the moment. But, But no, it wouldn't be considered steroid, depending on what you put in it, I guess. Like, my point is, you can put anything you want in that almost. Magic mouthwash can be a lot of different things.
Yes, I'm sure it can. Let's go to Ben in Sheffield, Massachusetts. Ben.
Yes, hello. So I saw an advertisement for instant implants. In other words, it showed a photograph of a tooth missing, a big, you know, like a void in the gum between two teeth. And then all of a sudden, supposedly in no time flat, there's an implant and a tooth. And I just wonder how viable such a thing could be, because it takes the bone a while to grow around an implant and so on and so forth. And I'm sure if the body can, you know, how viable is
it?
So, yeah, the literature does support that. That's an excellent question and a concern all dental providers have had. But the research does support that can be successful. Now, not every situation can you do that. I don't place implants. I have my oral surgeon, periodontist, colleagues place the actual implant. Sometimes they'll say that's not an option. So it does depend on the situation. But it can be done. It's not something that's impossible. The literature does support that those can be successful. So, but will it work? In your case, you have to see somebody that places the implant.
Sure. So good. Well, it's here. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate the call. And now we go over to Ed in Sharon, Connecticut. Ed, you're on.
Hi, thank you. About a year ago, back in February of last year, before the pandemic, I had a pain in my one or two of my lower front teeth. And the dentist took an x-ray and said that I had an infection and would need a root canal. Mm-hmm. And shortly after that is when everything closed down, and I kind of forgot about it. And it's been over a year, and I haven't had any other issues with it. And he did show me a little shadow or something on the x-ray. So I'm just wondering if these things can kind of lay dormant and fester for a while, or, you know, could there have been something else going on? And should I go back and have a root canal when I haven't had any issues in over a year?
Right. So a little bit depends on what the diagnosis of the tooth was. So they can lay dormant and be quiet, and sometimes we do kick the can down the road if we can't quite diagnose why a tooth was bothersome. Now, if they recommended a root canal, typically they probably saw like that radiolucency there, or they diagnosed it based on symptoms and history and things like that. But if it was an infection, then yeah, I would say certainly, even though it doesn't hurt now, infected teeth can certainly come back to haunt you symptomatically, but it's also not good. Your immune system is probably, you know, constantly fighting that. It may not be painful, but that's something you want to get addressed. If they weren't sure why it was bothering you and, you know, it was bothersome and now it's better, then, you know, maybe you could just kind of evaluate it. So I don't know exactly why it was, you know, recommended to do the root canal. But if it was an infection or there was a radiolucency there, because bottom teeth sometimes get traumatized, and it could be, you know, something that happened years ago or whatever, and now it's surfaced like a year ago, but it got quiet again. But it could be something that it has a chronic issue that should be addressed. So I guess if it was recommended, then I would definitely find out why exactly, you know, what is the diagnosis?
Yeah.
And then, you know.
And I think it was because of my symptoms and the x-ray. It's just kind of hard to justify after 14 months being pain-free to volunteer for a root canal.
Yeah, because sometimes you might have just been, you know, if the x-ray showed a dark circle at the bottom of the root, I would do it because it's probably going to come back. And you just can't predict when, right? It could be at a really inconvenient time.
Is there a convenient time? That's the question.
No, not for that stuff. The other thing is they would definitely want to x-ray it again just to see has it changed. You know, you could look back on older x-rays too. What's nice about digital x-rays now is it's easy. We can go back easy and look at old x-rays, you know, without kind of taking them out of the folder and holding them up in the light and stuff like that. So, you know, they can compare it over time. Has it changed?
All right,
I think I would definitely revisit it. Let's put it that way.
Dr. David Mottola joins us, and only about 2 minutes left here. Let's go to Spencer in New Paltz. Spencer, you're on.
Hey, doctor. I got a question. Have you ever noticed any correlation between a lightning strike and tooth loss.
What?
Lightning strike and tooth loss. Well, does it hit you?
Yeah.
I got struck in the right side of my head, and a couple molars on that side seemed to not do too well almost immediately afterward.
Good
Lord. It was a number of years ago, but...
Well...
Oh, I've been blown up, run over, struck by lightning.
I don't know exactly, okay, to answer your question, but I would think, yeah, a couple things. One, you could have a neurological response with you know, being struck by lightning that way. Secondly, you could have reflex-wise, like, clenched down, you know, maybe you broke the teeth, you know. I would think there could be multiple comprehensive medical issues that could come from that, and including the teeth. But specifically, I mean, you know, you wouldn't get a cavity from it, but, you know, you could certainly have some neurological impact. And then the clenching, I'm trying to think out loud. I don't know exactly, to be honest.
So this hasn't come – you haven't come across this particular case in your history, Dr. McCall.
Thankfully not, no. But you know, we do have a lot of different trauma accidents result in tooth issues. So
Spencer, we only have, go ahead, Doc.
No, I was going to say, a lot of time it's the reflex trauma clench, and you break your teeth or crack them.
That makes sense.
Spencer,
yeah.
We got 10 seconds here, but just give me a little background. How did you get struck by lightning?
I was, when phones used to have cords on them, I couldn't tell my buddy, hey, I got to hang up. I couldn't tell him fast enough, and it got me. And I was deaf in my right ear for 3 days. Wow. It was bad.
Wow, and you're okay now, though?
Well, that's probably a matter of debate, but, you know.
All right, man. Well, that's another show right there. Thank you for the call. Hey, Dr. David Mottola, how do people find you guys on the web?
Well, my last name is Mottola, MittoolaDDS. That's our website. They can Google search us. We're in Cohoes. The phone number is 237-0700. But, and not only can they find us, but if they want to look up American Dental Association and New York State Dental Association, there's a lot of good resources there as well.
All right, but if they do that, then they'll have no questions for you next time. And so I hope that they don't. And you come back soon, man. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's always fun.
We'll talk to you soon. Support comes from the Joint Replacement Center at Adirondack Health in Saranac Lake, providing tailored orthopedic procedures and rehabilitation to residents of Northern New York. Better health, better lives, AdirondackHealth.org. So the dude got struck by lightning, and he's worried about his teeth. You know what? I'll take that as a win. Thanks to, let's see, who? Zach was our engineer today. Zach, how long have you been here now? A couple of days, right? Zach, our longtime engineer. Thank you, sir. I forgot your name, but I'm senile. Joe Makowitz took the calls. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Now, tomorrow on the show, it's law enforcement. So we'll be welcoming Roderick Crawford to the... No, Albany Police Chief Eric Hawkins will be with us, and Saratoga County Sheriff Michael Zerlo will be with us. So gather your law enforcement questions. Those guys will be here at 2 o'clock. We'll see you then. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.